Welcome to another edition of the Health First Show. I'm your host, Dave Fuller, and today we're going to be talking with Dr. Larry Altschuler about his book, Balanced Healing and the Effects of Stress on the Body. In the second half of the show, we're going to be talking with Gene Blake about Parkinson's. But before we do that, here's the health news.
Prospects for people with type 2 diabetes and heart disease may be grimmer than previously believed, researchers report. Type 2 diabetes, accompanied by an acute coronary symptom, needs much more attention, especially in order to prevent yet another major cardiac event, said study leader Dr. William White. He is a professor with the University of Connecticut's Health Center's Calhoun Cardiology Center. The study included more than 5,300 people around the world with type 2 diabetes. Those admitted to the hospital for congestive heart failure had a 24-28% chance of dying within 18 months. That's 5 times higher than the risk among those not hospitalized for a major heart problem, the researchers said. The risk of heart disease is 2-3 times higher among people with type 2 diabetes than in the general population, the study authors pointed out. The study was to be presented at the American Diabetes Association's annual meeting and was published online in the journal Diabetes Care. A new study links unemployment during the recent Great Recession with weight gain in children. Study leader Vanessa Otto, a doctoral candidate in human nutrition at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health in Baltimore, said this study tells a dramatic story about the negative and lasting health effects of an economic shock like the Great Recession, effects that have not been fully understood. Childhood obesity is one of the biggest public health concerns of our time, she said, and since it's not easy to lose weight once it is gained, this period of economic hardship could have consequences that last long into adulthood. Otto and her colleagues analyzed data on 1.7 million public school children aged 7 to 18 in California. They also examined unemployment statistics from counties across the state. For every 1% increase in county-level unemployment between 2008 and 2012, there was a 4% higher risk that school children would become overweight. The average rise in unemployment during that time was 5.4%, meaning children's risks of becoming overweight rose roughly 21%, according to the researchers. The study was published online June 1st in the Journal of Epidemiology and Community Health. Runners over age 65 could burn oxygen at nearly the same rate as much younger runners, a new study finds. The rate of oxygen consumption is what researchers call running economy. They found that even though the gait of older runners may change, they still maintain youthful energy, or good running economy, while exercising. Study author Justice Ortega, an associate professor in the Department of Kinesiology at Humboldt State University in Arcata, California, said there's good evidence that it's never too late to get into exercise. It's about finding what types of exercise are right for your body. The finding offers another reason for people to remain active as they age, the researchers said. For the study, Ortega and colleagues from the University of Colorado at Boulder conducted treadmill assessments of 15 older runners and 15 younger runners who ran at least 3 times a week for a minimum of 30 minutes per session over 6 months. The study was published recently in the journal Medicine and Science in Sports and Exercise. Parents need to be cautious about what they say to their daughters about their weight, new research says. The study found that women who can remember their parents talking about their weight were more likely to be overweight and to be dissatisfied with their own weight. Commenting on a woman's weight is never a good idea, even when they are young girls, said lead author Brian Wansink, director of the Food and Brand Lab at Cornell University in Ithaca, New York. If you're worried about your child's weight, avoid criticizing them or restricting food, he said. Instead, nudge healthy choices and behaviors by giving them freedom to choose for themselves and by making the healthier choices more appealing and convenient. The study included 501 women between 20 and 35 years old. They were asked about their body image and how frequently their parents commented about their weight when they were girls. The study was published in the June issue of the journal Eating and Weight Disorders.
Well, thanks for that, Ellen. Our first guest, Dr. Larry Altschuler, is a medical doctor and is the director of oncology intake at the Cancer Treatment Centers of America. Dr. Altschuler, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. By the way, you mentioned my book, Balanced Healing, but that's one. That was my old book about 11 years ago. My new book is called Doctor Say What.
Doctor Say What. Well, tell us a little bit about the book.
Well, actually, it's a book series. There's two books. The first book basically is subtitled The Inside Scoop on Getting the Best Healthcare. It tells you everything you need to know about the healthcare system, preventive medicine, alternative medicine, conventional medicine, insurance, whatever you need to know to navigate the system, which can be kind of confusing. And then the second book is actually a guideline. I take 90 medical conditions, the most common medical conditions, and I tell people step by step, this is what works, this is what doesn't work, this is what you have to be aware of, this is how you start, this is what gives you the longest help and the best help and the least costly help. So it's a really good guide for helping whatever disease process you have.
Is there anything key to all diseases when we're talking about the disease process and the and treatment of that?
Well, you mean underlying problems like stress and things like that? Is that what you're referring to?
Well, I'm wondering if you notice any, you know, because you've been doing this for quite a while, what are you noticing are the similarities when you're treating disease?
Well, it's, you know, there's a lot of things that go into treating disease. And, of course, you know, different disease processes do different things. What I have found, one thing is that, you know, people are different. You know, every person that you treat for a specific medical condition may react differently to or respond differently to different medical problems. So you really have to look at people as a whole and look at their environment, their social environment, the work environment, their diet, their exercise, everything that goes along with what they're doing in their life that may help me treat that patient and get a good response from them. So that's really an essential point.
And so you're treating the people as a whole, it sounds like. It sounds like you're not treating the disease, but when you know, when somebody's coming into you, you're looking them at as a whole being and trying to discover what is it, you know, what are the causes. Is that correct?
That's correct. And, you know, like I say, everyone's different and everyone responds differently. But if you really can communicate with the patient and really find out a lot about them and then do an integrative approach to them and not just, you know, write a prescription, for example, then you're going to have a greater success and that patient is going to do better. Mm.
Are there any commonalities when we're talking about factors that are contributing to disease?
Well, yes, absolutely. And I think the main commonality, especially in the United States, is our lifestyle. Mm-hmm. There was a recent study that came out that showed that only 3% of Americans actually have a healthy lifestyle. Now, that's pretty bad. 97% of us do not have a healthy lifestyle. And what they're talking about is a good balanced diet, alcohol in moderation if you drink alcohol, getting exercise, and not smoking. Those four things really define that. And a lot of people just, you know, they don't, their diet's not good, they don't exercise like they should. And if they do that, they can really minimize disease. And if they do get a medical condition, which, of course, most of us will as we age anyway, it can really decrease the symptoms we have and help us get through that a lot better.
You know, when we're talking about a healthy lifestyle, what does that incorporate? Because that's a big, you know, big topic in itself.
Right. And lifestyle, you know, is what you do with your life. Again, diet is probably the most important. You know, eating a lot more fruits and vegetables, getting away from the junk food, the processed food. You know, so many people don't exercise. And even as simple as just walking, you know, walk a mile a day, that can help amazingly enough. And even the study showed that even in your everyday activities, if you're shopping, if you're doing housework, gardening, things like that, do that as much as you can because that actually helps as well. So basically those two things. And then, of course, there's the environment. You know, our environment can be pretty toxic. There's a lot of pollution out there. There's a lot of things that we eat and inhale that are really not good for us. And then, of course, we have lots of habits. You know, if we need to use our seatbelt, we shouldn't smoke. Alcohol in moderation is great, but a lot of people over-moderate. They drink too much, and that can be dangerous, but moderate alcohol has been found to be beneficial. So that's what we talk about of a good lifestyle. And then, of course, you know, activities, you know, get a hobby, you know, be happy, do something that is satisfying, have good relationships. All of those really go into how people do and how healthy they are.
What is the relationship between stress and disease that you see coming into your clinics?
Well, stress is probably, you know, is universal, of course. I mean, we cannot avoid stress. And actually, if any of your listeners can avoid stress, I'd like to know how they do that, because we're all going to have stress. And it can be emotional stress. It can be physical stress. You know, they come in a lot of ways. The problem is that stress, temporarily, if it's just a recent event, you know, we gear up for it, we take care of it, it goes away. What really gets us is the chronic stress that we can't get rid of. It's just all the time around us. And that increases the risk of a whole bunch of medical problems, heart disease, stroke, high blood pressure, diabetes. It can worsen asthma, it can cause GI problems like digestion problems. It can depress the immune system. It can predispose us to infection. It can cause muscle aches, neck and back pain. And it can, even in young people, it can induce infertility. It can make menopausal symptoms worse. And, of course, it can cause anxiety, depression. And overall, if you have chronic stress, it can cause premature aging and decreased survival, decreased longevity. So, you know, we really need to deal with our stress.
And at what point does, you know, the factors of a good lifestyle override the stress, or the factors that, you know, the point that maybe you're under a lot of chronic stress, even though you're taking care of your body in a lot of good ways, that, you know, you might be causing yourself some ill as well?
Well, sure. And, you know, in general, if you have a good lifestyle, that's really going to decrease the effects of stress. Because what happens when we have chronic stress, it actually stimulates certain hormones and things in our body, such as cortisol and catecholamines. And those substances actually protect us in the short term, what we call the fight or flight response. When we really are stressed out and we need to make some decisions, that helps us do that. But in the long run, if you have that being produced all the time, that's what really causes problems with our organ systems and cause diseases. So basically, though, what you want to do is you want to offset that. You want to balance it out. You want to be able to make sure that stress, those substances, are not causing damage to our organs. And so a good lifestyle can do that. If you eat, for example, if you have a good diet and you eat a lot of fruits and vegetables, that produces antioxidants that can actually stop these substances from doing harm to our body. If you exercise has been shown to lengthen what are called telomeres. Telomeres are the caps on our chromosomes, and it has to do with aging. The longer the telomere, the longer that chromosome, the longer our cells survive, and the longer we survive. Well, it's been shown that a good diet and exercise can lengthen telomeres, and thereby it increases the length of the survival of our cells and our longevity. So basically, by having a good lifestyle, you're really balancing out and really putting a barrier up to the damage that stress can do to your body.
We're talking with Dr. Larry Altshuler. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be finding out more about what you can do to avoid the stress in your life and live a healthier lifestyle.